Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we continue our expectations series today. We're going to talk about two players, different ends of the spectrum, different things to prove this year, Zay Flowers and Adisa Isaac. Joining me to do that is Tony. How are you doing, Tony? Tony G.
I'm doing very well, Ken. Tony G, yeah.
Your last name is not Games, right? You're just Tony G.
Yeah, we'll just go with Tony G. Very good. Okay. But my last name is Games.
It is Games. Okay. I was wondering if you're a game designer or something, and then I was going to ask
you
that. So that would have been kind of cool. Let me see if I can adjust one of your settings here for just a second. See if that helps a little bit. Anyway, let's talk about Zay Flowers a little bit. Entering his fourth season at age 26, the Ravens have already picked up his fifth-year option, so he'll be with the Ravens in 27 as well. It's cost them a lot of money, $28 million. Certainly a player I don't think the Ravens would like to find out what life is like without.
No. Zay is our clear-cut number one guy. He is a cornerstone of this offense, a cornerstone of this team, and glad to have him for the time being. I consider personally Zay a top 15 receiver in the NFL. You know, I think in a different offense, potentially could even be higher, but, you know, I think he's the best. Well, I know he's the best receiver the Ravens have ever drafted. I think outside of 2012, Anquan Boldin, he's maybe the best receiver we've ever had on the team. So happy to have him. He had a great 2025.
Yeah, it certainly did have a great 2025. And when, you know, one of the questions I get asked a lot, and it's or it's usually in the form of an assertion rather than a question, is like, well, Zay's not a number one receiver. I don't know what they're asking for. And what my first response to it is, give me the list of every single number one receiver in the league, and I'll tell you if Zay's better than some of those guys. But I don't want to play the game of trying to tag somebody with that title of a WR1 or he's just a WR2 kind of thing. A lot of people just want X receivers to be WR1s. That's obviously not what Zay is. But in terms of results, it'd be real hard to place him outside even the top 10, I think, in the league right now. We'll get to some of those metrics in a moment. But are you similarly kind of annoyed by that sort of discussion?
I am. You know, it's with the Ravens, you know, you have to kind of weigh everything per offense. And I am, you know, there's a lot of discourse that happens with several Ravens players. You know, Lamar Jackson slander is at an all-time high. And, you know, I think Zay follows suit. He gets a lot of hate. You know, people see the highlights of him fumbling on the goal line and stuff like that. But what he does for this team and his just natural ability is almost second to none.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Really has unbelievable separation that accrues from his suddenness as an athlete. His size allows him to do things other receivers can't. Most other big receivers, one of the big things I'm looking for when I look at draft prospects or I'm looking at any kind of film of a player is how far do they have to sink their hips and sit in the chair to decelerate and change direction, because that's, you know, some players do it very smoothly and they kind of corner like a Ferrari and whatnot. Others, they have to you know, literally sit way down in the chair. They give away a lot of information to the opposing cornerback. And at the college level, opposing cornerbacks don't always take advantage of that information. At the pro level, they almost always do. And, you know, the guys are good enough that they'll break right on the route when they see you decelerating in a way that they take as a comeback route, or, you know, give you a lot of troubles at the catch point if they don't in fact make a play on the football themselves. So a lot of trouble with receivers does that. Zay is not an issue. He puts his foot in the ground and he goes a different direction, and he literally does not have to sink his hips any appreciable amount. Of course it's a little bit, but it's such a quick turn. There's literally no cornerback in the NFL who can keep up with a Zay Flowers in cut. And it makes him so dangerous. It should make him more dangerous on vertical routes as well. But in terms of in cuts and crossing between level two and level three, I don't think there's a more dangerous receiver in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, his ability to move the way he does, the change of direction, you know, especially with the Ravens, you know, a big extended play team with Lamar, given enough time, it's impossible to cover Zay for the whole duration of a, you know, Lamar play. And, you know, it's almost Barry Sanders-esque from a receiver's possession, what that guy could do in space. It's really fun to watch.
That's a good comp. there. And that, obviously a very attractive comp, a very favorable comp for Zay. We saw him show up on the extended plays twice in the final game of the season against Pittsburgh. You know, both those plays, you know, they were extended. He got way behind the defense in both cases and was wide open for the touchdown. I have other things to say about that, but that's a discussion for another day. The one thing that he hasn't done as much in his career, I really don't believe is as much a part of his game, and maybe it's because he really hasn't had to learn this at a high level, is he doesn't really sell anything to the opposing corner at the top of the stem. Now, when you can in-cut the way he does, you don't have to sell anything. You're just going in the other direction, and that corner can't keep up with you. That's great. But if he wants to become the kind of vertical threat that I think he could be, there's still a level of growth in his route running, I think, to improve there, and maybe even have a set of comeback routes that go with vertical group that would force cornerbacks into bad decisions.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, kind of what he was used last year, again, had a great season. He was just, he is a quintessential Z receiver. You know, he fits that mold. But, you know, last year he was used a lot on, I think his average route ran was like 10 yards. He was used a lot in the intermediate, a lot in those comebacks, a lot of those curls. And I think there's a really good player to look at that. I think someone like JSN last year, right? He was a career slot guy, and then once DK left, and who's the other outside guy?
For the Seahawks. Not like a Tyler Lockett or something. He was really a
Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett, exactly. So they had DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett for a long time, and JSN was almost primarily a slot. And then once both those guys left, you know, Kubiak did an amazing job at moving JSN to, I mean, he, I think it was like 75% of his snaps were primarily on the outside, but he played a mixture of X, he played a mixture of Z, and they really schemed the offense around him. He played a lot in the slot. And, you know, being that Declan Doyle is a disciple of Peyton, there we go, sorry. Being that he's a disciple of Peyton, I think where most offensive coordinators, you know, they have a play, and then you have your first read, second read, third read. I think Peyton did a really good job of scheming specifically per player. And I'm hoping to see a little bit of that with Declan Doyle and really move Zay around the formation. I think it could really pay dividends. You know, I think, you know, he might not look like, or might not think of him as an X receiver, but shoot, I mean, you get him out there and run 10 routes at X, I would wager a bet that he could find space on that half of the field. He could play Z, obviously. He could be the gadget guy. He could play in the slot. I would like to see Zay's role in the offense kind of expand, and I think it would be really good for the Ravens.
I mean, he gets a lot of targets already, but for Zay's, Zay is kind of like Kyle Hamilton in this way. Kyle Hamilton can play a good deep safety for you on the strong side. He could even play free safety if that's what you needed him to do. And he can certainly play slot corner. He can do you the most good playing slot corner because he just has more impact on the game there on the strong side of the football field and impacting a lot of different play types that are run to that side. That's why I say he's the best horizontal defender in the game right now. But in terms of Zay, I think you actually reduce his impactfulness by running him in gadget plays, because I think so much defensive attention needs to go to him if you try and run him down the football field between level two and level three, or just run any kind of 7-8-9 route with him. I think the cornerback needs help, directly. And I think if the Ravens don't take advantage of that fact, the offensive scheme doesn't take advantage of that fact, they're missing out. I mean, it's an opportunity lost in terms of exploiting the middle of the field then with tight ends or with Bateman or with whoever it might be to get the ball. Even, you know, as an assistant to the running game in some ways, if you're going to run some draws and some plays out of the mesh point where Lamar ends up running, you can get a guy out of position in the secondary that can really have value with routes run.
Yep, I do agree with that.
All right, I want to go through go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I want to get into metrics. So if you had something else to say to that before, we'll.
Sure, I'll chime in one more thing. You know, one thing I think is kind of underrated and that I really appreciate of Zay, there was times where the offense last year was very bleak. where you had a Lamar that was a shell of himself, or, you know, you had Huntley in, and, you know, Anders had a very slow start to the season. There was times where I felt like Henry had nowhere to go and he felt a little hesitant to hit the hole and such. But I felt like Zay was the one player all season that gave it his all. He was the beacon of light in the bleakness of the offense at times. And, you know, he never complained and really put forth his best effort at all times. And I think that is something that should be acknowledged.
Yeah, I'm, you know, it is certainly nice that that's the case. And he seems to really love playing with Lamar. And I think keeping those two together and happy is going to be a very key element for the Ravens. So I certainly hope they can figure out the contract, and that figures into my good and great season in a big way. But let's talk about the metrics in 2025. This goes back to our question about the number one receiver designation. And I'll just ask people out there, I don't really give a crap how you define a WR1. I really don't. I'm not going to engage with you on the topic, generally speaking, but I'll present the following to you about Zay, and then you decide how it fits into your slotting of him by category. So a number of things are in there, but let's talk about these each one at a time. Your drop rate is just average in the NFL. He's 22nd out of 42 receivers with 86 plus targets. So this is the group I'm looking at. The universe I looked at was the 42 receivers who had 86 plus targets. The reason I used 86 plus targets is because that's what I used the year before. And it happened to be half of the maximum number of targets. Now that half of the maximum number of targets, with Puka Nacua getting 200 targets last year, is 100, and that's too exclusionary. You end up with 26 or 28 receivers with 100 targets. So I'm not looking to cut it down that much. But anyway, the guys with 86 plus targets, he was 22nd in drop rate. That's certainly something that I think most Ravens fans would say that hadn't been a really good area. And he'd been, I think, the eighth worst 2 years ago and the 17th worst the previous in 24. And then 25, he improved to basically the midpoint of that group.
Yeah, you know, the drops, you would like him to not drop quite as many passes. You know, with his size and hand size and kind of the style that he plays, I don't expect him to be Larry Fitzgerald out there. But I think that is an area where he definitely can improve.
Yeah. All right, so contested catches is the next thing. And this is a place where you'd expect Zay Flowers to have a lot of difficulty because he's not a big guy. So if there's going to be contested catches, you'd expect him to be not particularly good. Well, it's not a lot of targets. It's only 13 targets, which is, by the way, tied for the second fewest contested targets of all of the players. Now, you can credit some of that on Lamar. I think in a better season by Lamar in terms of injuries, you'd have even more uncontested targets in the year. Maybe more targets and more uncontested targets. But, you know, that's terrific to have the second fewest contested targets. The second part of this is, he was 14th out of 42 in terms of contested catch rate. And those at the NFL level, by the way, they're a lot lower than they are for the draftable receivers in college. Draftable receivers in college, I'm looking for about a 60%, 58% contested catch rate is pretty good for a draftable receivers. In this case, he was at 7 out of 13. So it's right around 53, 54% for the season. And that was one of the better ones at 14 out of 42. Certainly something I don't think people normally associate with Zay.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the fact he doesn't get a lot of contested catches, you know, says a lot about his ability to separate.
Yep.
And then when he does have contested catches with his size, I mean, for lack of better terms, you know, he got that dog in him. You know, I saw this interview recently where he wakes up at 4:30 in the morning every single day of his life, you know, in season, out of season, to work out, to get better. So I just think he has that toughness, that tenacity. If the ball's there, he thinks it's his.
Hopefully that's something that he and Lamar continue to kind of instill in each other. I think Lamar has always had the great off-season desire to get better, and he does it in his own way and doesn't necessarily show up at OTAs and whatnot. And I think, you know, Lamar has proven by his play on the field that he can take his own path to get there and be ready for when the season begins. There might be a case where, you know, the rest of the team could benefit a little bit from gaining connection with Lamar by early times, but I think camp is enough. I don't think he needs to be there for OTAs. In the case of Zay, great to hear about the workout things. He's a guy who I would almost be a little concerned if he was lifting weights too much, that he might lose that flexibility that would help. I'm not enough of them of a kinesthetic expert to really judge that, but I know that has happened to baseball players who really try and bulk up to become power hitters, and they lose the flexibility that can help them, you know, with bat speed and other elements staying healthy and other things about if they don't lift weights as often.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the story was really cool. I guess is, you know, he comes from like a family of 9 children, and his dad, you know, worked like 12 hours a day and everything. So his whole mindset is he's going to work so hard that he's successful, that he could provide for his family and all that. But yeah, you know, I think Zay's done a really great job of staying in shape, and I don't think he's kind of overdone. I think he has the right idea of what his body is and how to kind of maximize that without overdoing it in a fashion.
Yeah, with you on that. Okay, so let's look at some of the others. And you alluded to this earlier. His ADOT was 10.1 this year. That still is 31st out of the 42 receivers in this group. He's continued to be used behind the line of scrimmage as a target from time to time. And that happened a little bit more. I think it also got his numbers got dragged down a little year, both by Lamar's injury to a degree, and also by the fact that Cooper Rush and Tyler Huntley were in the game, and those guys needed to get the ball schemed out of their hands more quickly, which led to some shorter plays to Flowers during that time. I'm not saying that was the be all end all, but I'm saying it's not a good thing for your generalized receiving stats to be playing with either of those quarterbacks. And no offense to Tyler, who won 2 important football games this year, but it's just the truth of the matter is that both of them are generally going to hurt your receiving statistics.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think Zay could be a really great vertical threat as well, especially out of the Z. I think he has the ability to make someone miss on the top of the route. And he showed he could track a ball. He showed he could catch the ball over his shoulders. Yeah, he might not be Hollywood Brown on that vertical straight speed, but he's still speedy enough where he could get behind guys, and he's slippery enough where he could get behind safety. So I would love to see him kind of, again, kind of going back to JSN, where JSN did a lot of intermediate, but he also did a lot of vertical routes. And I think Zay, I would like to see a little bit more of that. And he did have 14.1 yards average per route kind of at the end of the day. So
you're 14 average per reception.
Per reception, yes.
Yeah. Yep. His yards per target were off a little bit this year, but one metric that wasn't was his yards per route run, which was a career high of 2.53 and third in the entire NFL. Now, I don't know how you define number one receivers, but if that's not part of it, you're missing a big one. I would say yards per target is number one I would look at, and yards per route run is probably number two of the things I looked at. It might be number three because I might put passer rating in at number two. So I think avoiding interceptions on balls thrown to you is very important. But those three things, I mean, Zay has done extremely well at. And the third in yards per route run, I looked at it for the first time today. I saw it, or maybe it was yesterday when I was writing this, and was actually amazed by it. And does that surprise you at all that the only two guys ahead of him are, I think it's Nacua and it might be Chase, are the two guys, but I'm going to bring this up for a second here while we talk.
Yeah, I mean, when you do think about that it is kind of a little mind-blowing. But, you know, I kind of went back and watched some of the tape over the last few days, and man, he does look really good. And, you know, I think another impressive thing is, you know, he was like number 6 in the NFL in yards, and there was only one guy in the top 10 that had less targets, you know, thrown to less. So he definitely makes the most of the ball thrown to him.
Yeah. All right. We did want to get those players. It'll come up in a second here. I'm just loading up right now. Yeah, the two guys ahead of him were, I believe it's Puka and JSN were the two, but let me just do this really quickly because I kind of feel like this is important. Yeah, so Puka was at 3.71 yards per route run, which is unbelievable. JSN at 3.62. If you want to make a case that they're the only two number one receivers in the NFL, I can see it. Okay, then Zay Flowers at 253. Amon-Ra St. Brown at 248. Stephon Diggs at 242. CeeDee Lamb at 237. Ja'Marr Chase is all the way down at 223. And you got Justin Jefferson is at 188 with Minnesota. So DK Metcalf, you know, certainly a guy who hit the Ravens pretty hard, but is at 183 per route run. It just Flowers really dominated that statistic this last year. You know, it was had turned into an outstanding statistic. I will say he dominated with two guys ahead of him, but was impressive.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected him to be that high if I had to guess, but I'd love to hear that.
So 16 missed tackles forced this last year. That's 0.19 per reception. That really helped fuel 5.5 yak per reception. Again, fifth out of 42 receivers. That is a no-nonsense, outstanding number. And if you're trying to, you know, create any kind of list of the top 10 receivers in the league, it just can't, you can't miss Zay Flowers on this list when you, where there are numbers like this included.
Yeah. And I looked at the top 20 receivers too with yards last season, and there was only five receivers in the whole top 20 that had less targets than him. And most of those guys were injured. I also saw a metric where he was number eight in yak, yards after catch. I thought, you know, that seems to check out. So that's just another notch on his belt of what really makes Zay special.
Last thing I'll say for metrics is 113.6 passer rating when thrown to was seventh of the receivers. Simply outstanding, particularly given the fact that he had some rush and Huntley play in there, which certainly would have created a drag on those numbers, or at least an expected drag. I'm not sure if it created an actual drag, but you would have expected there to be drag from those guys throwing to him. I'll pose this as a question. How do you look at the 2026 set of receivers? It's going to look very different. It'll have some bigger guys, but potentially vying for playing time on that left side. We may see Bateman in a slightly different role. Not even sure how they'll use everybody at this point. But do you see that as being something that will help Zay, or do you think it won't necessarily be better than what he had with Hopkins or with Likely at tight end as opposed to other guys they'll have this year?
Yeah, so I have a funny analogy that kind of dawned on me the other day. I think with the five Ravens receivers, they've like literally built a basketball lineup. You kind of, if you look at it, Zay's kind of the point guard, the shifty guy, the offense goes through him. Bateman, kind of the shooting guard, right? He could get open in space. And then, you know, Tez, to me, I think he would be a great backup Z. I kind of see that as his role. And he's kind of like the small forward that lets it rain from long range, right, on the vertical routes. And then, the center, you got a Lane. He would make the good center, the big, tall guy. And then Sarat is the the rebounder. And then Sarat is kind of that power forward, get dirty down there in the slot, kind of in the paint. So I think they have a really good balance of receivers. I think with the five, hopefully competent receivers, more so than in recent memory, I think they could really switch guys in and out, keep some fresh legs. I know you've spoken about that recently.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to pay dividends. I think Zay's target share is probably going to be about the same, maybe a little more, give or take. I think everyone else is going to be spread out more across the board. Hopefully Bateman gets his target share this year. And I've been a big fan of Bateman for a long time. Last year was very disappointing, but when I look back at his 2024 highlights, I'm like, God, this guy was so good. So I would love to see him get back on track and then mix in Lane. I would love to see him mix in, you know, I think a lot of 11 personnel, we might see some four receiver sets, three receiver sets, a lot of 12. So I think this is going to be a year where we're going to see a lot of receivers used more than usual.
Well, they have an extra half a receiver per play effectively by the fact that Ricard won't be playing half of the snaps. So you can allocate them to some other receiving asset, be that a tight end, which will be some of it, a wide receiver, which will create more 11, or even a running back to create a few more pony backfield opportunities. So it should be a good mix of stuff. One thing I always, when people try and project yards for a receiver, and I guess we're gonna probably do that as we go through talking about what makes up a good year and a great year. Actually, I avoided it for Flowers specifically, but I'd encourage you, don't try and just like put your nose up to the wind or whatever, or put your finger up to the wind and just say, I see this is a 1,500 yard opportunity for Zay Flowers. No reason why that can't be. Well, there's lots of reasons why it can't be and why it might not even be a good thing if it was. You know, you don't want the Ravens offense depending completely on him. If Lamar Jackson is healthy and the Ravens are as dominant as they usually are, playing offensive football and playing good defense now with Minter and better scheme. Hopefully, the Ravens will have leads to protect and will be very minimally throwing the football. They'll be running the football a lot, and that means less targets for everybody. And we know every single target goes through the possibility of a Lamar Jackson scramble on the way to getting there. So, the Ravens throw the ball a lot less than other teams in the league, and you got to be satisfied with fewer targets, even if you're the number one target share guy on the Ravens, as Flowers is.
Yeah. If we threw the ball five times a game and we still won, I would not care. I love it. But yeah, I do have a vision of what I would constitute a good and a great season, but I don't think, are we quite there yet?
I just had a couple more things to say. The biggest issue for Flowers this last year was fumbles, was that he had three fumbles. JSN had three and Pickens had four. They were the only other guys in the league who had as many. Does kind of try and chicken dance, I'll say, the ball out to his side sometimes. You use your arms for leverage when you run. If you run a marathon, run whatever. I mean, any human running, has a side to side motion of their arms, so they are using that, and that includes the arm with the football in it. So there's oftentimes a risk for that, and defenders know how to look for when you're holding that ball wide and when you're holding it in a way that it can be punched free. And unfortunately, they've been able to take advantage of that with Zay. I'm hoping that's an area where he can improve. Just, reducing his fumbles from say 3 to 1 would be an enormous uptick in value for him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think some of those areas, like when Zay gets the ball, he catches the ball and he's making 15 different moves to beat the cornerback. Meanwhile, you see the linebacker or the defensive tackle running upfield behind him. You're holding your breath.
Yep.
And a part of me doesn't want to see as much, but also that's what makes Zay special. That's just kind of what he's going to do. But I don't know if a fellow Ravens player could verbally alert him when someone's coming up behind him, or he could just have better awareness in general. But he's holding the ball there, waiting to make that sixth move to get by the guy. And meanwhile, someone's coming up from behind him. And then, there's also been, I don't want to say boneheaded, but a couple things that just part of him being a competitor, whereas he should have went down before the goal line to waste some time. He'll go into the end zone. He'll dive into the end zone with the ball extended. A couple of those things, I hope maybe through maturation, he kind of cleans up and quits doing some of those things. But also that just is part of Zay and makes him, electric football player. He has that desire to score. So,
well, the Ravens have changed a lot of parties in that regard. So I can't say that none of the failed kneels over the years, the Juszczyk kneel against the Steelers in 2016, and the Flowers kneel being another big one, the Flowers non-kneel against the Rams. In 24 in the game they won. I think it was 24 in the game they won in LA. There are others as well. I can't say that they're not all, at least in part on Harbaugh. I do know the Ravens did a lot of that in advance to make those decisions in advance, and then they would print them up and they would have it to kind of like divine from a sheet there rather than trying to recalculate on the fly. And some of the reason for that is technical, that they don't have access to calculation devices in the booth because the NFL doesn't allow them. And so I've asked, people in the know who actually are in the booth, could you have a slide rule there? Even if they don't allow you a calculator, which they apparently don't, could you have a slide rule? And, it's an interesting question. I mean, we got to the moon with the freaking slide rule. That's exactly how we got there, with the 3 decimal place accuracy of the slide rule. So I guarantee you there's not 3 decimal place accuracy from the assumptions you would put into the problem, to determine win probability at the end of a football game. 3 decimal place accuracy would be plenty, is my point. It'd be perfectly fine, I think, to do that, but I don't know whether that would actually be allowed. It'd be interesting to see if the NFL ruled that as a calculation device. Now, just in the last 2 years or 1 year, one of the other, it's either 24 or 25, they brought in Excel into the booth, and they're allowed to have one person with Excel in their database. And the reason is because they feed play data into that then they could potentially also have a spreadsheet there that would allow them to make a calculation of win probability that would work off of, you know, some kind of modeling. Otherwise, there are ways to do it. You could do it with a simple tree diagram worksheet that you had one for each of many different situations, and you could work through it on the fly. It's really not that hard. If anybody from the Ravens is listening out there and would like me to set something up for them like that, be happy to work with you on that. But they've got a new guy in football strategy now. They have Charlie Gellman, who I think is going to be the primary headset elf. He's a 26-year-old guy, so probably very smart kid who worked already for the Colts in a similar role and will be the primary strategy headset elf, I believe, for Minter this season. So I'm looking forward to how that changes. They had Stern in that position for many years. I thought he's very smart and very good, but his contract was up, and like with a lot of other coaches, even though he'd worked with Minter before, Minter chose a different guy in the process. And actually Stern went off to a big job in Seattle, a really big uptick in role for him, which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I say we go with the Bill Belichick method, you know, push something that's so far out of the box that will probably be illegal soon, but be at the forefront of doing it, at the beginning.
You're talking about the slide rule now. It's just show up the slide rules and just see if they'll let them get
it. Yeah, I'll put your name in the hat for that role. And then, in the Ravens the last few years with Harbaugh, too, there's been a lot of contention over a lot of these decisions, whether to go for it on fourth down, to punt, to not. And I feel like, honestly, a little bit, it's probably swayed in the negative direction, some of these really like critical decisions he's had to make that are like 50-50 decisions, I feel like have kind of gone in the wrong way. So I wonder if the Ravens and Minter kind of tone back on that, or if they're more aggressive, or they use better analytics, or whatever it is.
I don't think there are many instances that I would point to where Harbaugh was too aggressive. I think if anything, almost like virtually every single NFL coach, including Staley, who was the ultimate guy known for Dan Campbell, the ultimate guy is known
Campbell,
for being super aggressive relative to anything that's been done by coaching previously. All of them are kind of pussies to some degree relative to how mathematicians would run the game. Mathematicians will always say, no, this is definitely a go for it situation on almost any fourth and one from any yard line. Remember when Harbaugh went for fourth and one from the 16 yard line, that was like, staring someone down in the eyes. Well, that was the obvious play. It was an obvious play. Come on. the mathematicians are saying, we've been telling you that for years. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. Finally, you're doing it. And in fact, I had somebody question me about the Bill Belichick fourth and two situation, which happened, I'm sure remember years ago when they were in the game against the Colts. He went for it in fourth and two from his own 29. If you're an older guy, you remember Barry Switzer going at it from fourth and one from his own in the 29-yard line, maybe also, or in the 20s anyway, and was questioned a lot for it after it failed. Both those guys were right. They were right, and they were obviously right. When mathematicians are looking at the point, it's taking forever. The glacial pace of picking up on how mathematicians would run the game, it's happening, if people are waking up to it, people understanding, oh, this is the new math of going for a 2-point conversion when you're down 8 points. Well, no, actually that math is ancient. You're just coming around to it and getting up and understanding it at this point. So anyway, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but something's always pissed me off about the way that football is run here. But anyway, it was very interesting to me to learn all these things about how the NFL is really trying to avoid an arms race in the coaching boxes and doesn't allow a lot of individual analytic tools. They don't want anybody plugged into a mainframe that's just going to be making the decisions directly on what might be operating.
It's kind of like baseball. Some of these managers now, they're just, you know, everything is decided. Who's going to pitch when, the lineup versus a certain pitcher based off of yada, yada, yada. And, you know, as a Dodger fan, you know, that was a big point of contention. And when the Dodgers lost, they said, oh, it was this Andrew Friedman talking through Dave Roberts, the puppet. And it seems like Dave Roberts, again, as a Dodger fan, used a little bit more of his free will mixed with the stats. And then we've been successful since then. So I think that is kind of the perfect blend of using technology versus intuition.
All right. The Orioles call those hitter versus pitcher stats the Earl Weaver stats, because that was one of his big innovations way back in the day. I'm not saying he was the only manager even doing it back then, but he was one of the guys who was very avant-garde about it at the time. And interestingly enough, Dave Johnson played for him and was getting a master's in mathematics, but some sort of math degree at Hopkins while he was playing for the Orioles, and had given Weaver a lot of optimal lineup elements that had him in a more prominent role in the lineup. And Weaver was not interested in looking at that anyway. But
I love it.
Yeah, some fun stuff. All right. So what else is there to say about Zay before we get into a good and great year? I don't ever see him returning to special teams unless it's an emergency. We've had some bad things happen on special teams. He could be a designated fair catch guy, I suppose. I don't think he's better than some other players they could put out there who could fair catch on punt returns, and they have some other guys. But I don't expect to ever see in camp Flowers returning punts, even, or returning kickoffs to just, you know, be ready to do it even. I expect him to be taking that time off.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't want him to see special teams whatsoever. I think he's too important for this team.
Well, let's get into what a good and a great season is. And you go first. And by the way, just tell us kind of what your thought process is as you set this. I don't demand anybody use any method. I tell people how I do it, but excuse me. Tell folks how you came up with a good and great season.
Yeah, I think I looked at it to try to put my finger on like a quantitative numbers statistic version, and then also just kind of a broad general view of how I would constitute a good or a great season. So on the, like, the stats wise, if you look at his first 3 years in the league, pretty similar seasons, you know, give or take. You know, touchdowns were all like 5 or 6 touchdowns every year, close to 1,000 yards. So a good season to me, again, is 1,000-yard season with 5 touchdowns. And I think he's just, you know, a really great Z receiver in this Ravens offense. I think he's continues to do everything he's done, you know, gets better at his catch rate, less drops, less fumbles, and just continues to grow with this team. And then, yeah.
Okay. So you're statistically, you're not really setting a specific bar. You're setting a qualitative bar for what you'd like to see, a very similar season.
Yeah, exactly. I think with this Ravens offense, 1,000 yards, eclipsing 1,000 yards, and 5 touchdowns, and being the wide receiver 1 for this offense,
right?
Or I think is perfectly fine. Good season for Zay Flowers.
Okay, fair enough. I like to set the good season at the 60th percentile, and I'd like to see all of the following. That he's healthy for 14 or more games out of 17. So he misses no more than 3. There have been some issues with him missing games with injury. Has a similar passing rating when thrown to. He's got Lamar Jackson throwing to him. He should be above the normal Lamar Jackson number because he's a little bit better than that, than the rest of the receivers. And he's near his career highs in yards per target and yards per route run. I don't expect him to be a 2.53 yards per route run guy again. Hopefully the offense, in fact, gets the ball spread around a little bit more and is effective because of it. I think his yards per target could be higher, but he's, you know, if 9, 9.5, anywhere in that range would be absolutely fine. Here's the biggest thing, though, that he remains undefensible on crossing routes and is one of the wide receivers that other teams have to plan for with several other good options available. So, okay, what I mean by that is that he's taking safety help basically over the top that allows other receivers opportunities that accrue from that. So that's important, and that's a baseline part of a 60th percentile season, not even an 80th. And I'd say the other thing that would tell me that he's going in the right direction with a good season is that the Ravens extend him prior to the 27 season. And remember, he's already signed for the 27 season. So if they extend him prior to that, they're just doing the what I would consider to be the most prudent, the least prudent waiting amount on a star player is that you wait before the final year of his contract. I don't think the Ravens should do that with Lamar Jackson, but I think they could do it with Zay Flowers. And they did do it with Linderbaum and it backfired. They probably could have had Linderbaum cheaper, but they couldn't sign him at that time. And some of that was probably, you know, Linderbaum understood that his market value was going to be higher and didn't want to do it.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think the players like Travis Jones and Hamilton, I think the guys that you extend early and make sure you lock them down, I think a great season for me, Zay would fall into that camp.
Okay. All right. Well, let's a great season. What yep. additions do you have on that at that level?
Yep. Yeah. So he eclipsed 1,200 yards this year. I think another great season would be eclipsing 1,200 yards again. I think upping the touchdowns to seven plus would be great. Yards run per route. I think if he stays similar to that, I think would be amazing. I think being multifaceted in these offense, I think playing a little bit of slot, doing more, going vertical, and really becoming the focal point of this offense to the point where he's looking so good, the ball has to get in his hands. Declan Doyle recognizes that, and he just does more. I think getting extended early is a part of something I was going to say. He looks so good. He gets extended kind of immediately.
Immediately when?
Oh, I would like to see it before the end of 2026 season.
Okay. And I have exactly the same thing, is that he'd be extended prior to the end of the 26 season in the great season. I don't have very much. Take a step forward with 16 plus games plus all playoffs. So right there, he's healthy for no more. He's off the game day roster no more than once. Okay, he's used primarily as a threat on deep overs, which maximizes his ability to separate and run away from DBs. So we talked earlier about the thing that has worked for Zay all during 25, made him one of those dangerous receivers in the game. That has to continue to work. And it basically would be great if it continued to work and they still had to use extra resources to try and cover it and just weren't real successful. That would be fantastic. In addition to that, I think that he constantly demands safety help. Got that part. And he thrives in a fresh legs offense with rotational usage. Now, Zay's played a very high percentage of snaps these last few years. In fact, this last year, he played something like 880 snaps or thereabouts. And the Ravens didn't have that many total offensive snaps. It was probably about 90% of the snaps. In fact, I've got it up here. Let me see what he played last year on offense as a percentage of snaps. Yeah, 87% of snaps he played, which was up from 85 and 75 in 23 and 24. Now, he did play all the games for starters, but I think the number I see out here, the 85 and 75, is only in the games played where he's healthy, the percentage of those snaps that they use. So still means if he got hurt during a game, then he would have lost, you know, some portion of the snaps during that game, maybe averaging half, and that would bring his number down. But I think he's a player who might actually benefit from more rotation. Not sure the offense will benefit as a whole from it, but I think he could benefit from it and be more of a threat. And the Ravens extend him during the 2026 season will be the best evidence that they can't live without him. And I think that you know, it's going to be a big decision. It's going to be it'll be the first wide receiver that the Ravens have ever paid Umongo money to. They've paid You know, they paid good money to Bateman, you know, 3 years, $35 million for Bateman, but frankly, a bargain contract. They've gone out and they've got some veteran wide receivers, but they really haven't ever paid a guy top of the market wide receiver money in their history. And this is going to be the one that they finally have to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Eric DaCosta's ego too really wants to prove that he finally drafted a great receiver. And I think he would love to extend Zay. And honestly, you know, him being a Florida boy, him being Lamar's buddy, I think Lamar is probably also banging the table, and that might have to be part of coercing Lamar to sign.
Well, I mean, hopefully, you know, I don't hope that that's a condition of it, and yet I wouldn't be unhappy
if
both of them are signed because of it, obviously. And I think that they play very well together as an extended play target. Zay is obviously extremely deadly, and I think that's you know, certainly something to look forward to. But I'm with you. We'll see how this plays out, and I just hope we're not in a position where we get to the end of training camp in 27 and he's not signed, because then every week that rolls off the schedule, there is an incremental risk that Zay Flowers will be lost. It probably means somebody's in his ear, whether that is his agent or his family or, you know, somebody else telling him there's a lot of money out there to be made. Why don't you just wait it out? And you get an extra, you know, $5 to $7 million per year from some other really needy team out there. That it would be a bad position. And that obviously the people who were in Linderbaum's ear were right about him getting more money. Yeah.
Or perhaps Lane and Surratt are so good, we could save $30 million a year and not sign Zay. Well,
there's another possibility. I don't think we'll know by next training camp if both those guys are really at that level, but it's, you know, that has to be discussed, because that's all this game is from a general manager perspective, is trying to maximize the limited resources that you have. You have to decide where you're not going to spend. And the Ravens constantly have too many players of quality that run through their draft process to be able to sign all of them. And, you know, just look at the free agent departures this year and you get a sense of how dire that situation is, and losing Linderbaum and likely, I mean, just it's scary, but there has to be a decision made on where you don't spend money. So that's what I want from people who want to sign every big skill position player, is where are you, what resources are you going to give up to generate that money? Who are you going to not sign? And I don't want to hear about a past signing, you know, that went bad, because that's not playing the current thing. And I also don't want to hear about, oh, you can cut this player post June 1, and instead their impact on the cap this year is less. That's just changing the accounting. Don't tell me those things, but, you know, be fair.
Exactly.
Tell me
where you're going to spend. Yeah. Yep. And while we're talking about center briefly, I'm on the camp that Corey Bullock is 80% the player at 12% of the price. And I'm on team Bullock. I really like him, but that's a different podcast.
Could literally be 4% of the price this year. So, but in another year or two, it probably gets some playing time incentives if he really works out, and it might get up to 12%. So anyway, let's talk about Adisa Isaac here, because I know his family's been listening to this pod for quite a while, hoping for the Adisa Isaac portion to start. A guy who's had a very disappointing first 2 years with the Ravens. Injuries have limited him to 78 career snaps. Only 32 of those have come on defense. All of those in 24, none in 25. He enters year three as part of a very crowded outside linebacker group. And I don't know about you, Tony, I don't see him as a sure thing to make this team.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, it's been a very unfortunate set a couple years, kind of like the Ajabo situation, where he's, you know, had the elbow dislocation with the tendons damage, the hamstring that lingered. And again, it's not a sure thing that he does make this team, but I am definitely glasses half full. I am optimistic, and I do really like the player. Coming out of Penn State, I really liked him. You know, 16 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks, really good athletic traits. I think he's good at kind of everything, like rushing the passer. I think he's good in run defense, and I think he has good coverage skills, but not great in anything. You know, very high motor guy. Like, you watch his tape, and that guy has no quit in him. And I think the Ravens will value that. He was a team captain. So there's a lot I really like about him. And I have a vision of where he fits into this team that I think would really help his cause.
Let me guess. It's Sam linebacker, because he's a guy who can, if he can stand up and cover, that's something the Ravens don't otherwise have in either Tavius or in Zion Young.
Bingo. Yeah. Ravens typically keep five outside linebackers. And where I see him, you know, obviously passing downs, you're going to have Green, you're going to have Hendrickson. And then the early downs, you could see Zion Young, you could see Tavius. But I could see maybe a split with Tavius, where Tavius, his strength is run defense. And if Adisa Isaac can take some of those snaps away from him and show that he could cover kind of the Kyle Van Noy role and really show he got some chops and pass coverage, I think he could slowly but surely become the Ravens' Sam linebacker. I think he actually might start pushing Tavius down the depth chart. And I really like him as his versatility. I think he could generate sacks better than Tavius. I think he could, he doesn't have the size and run defense like Tavius, so I don't think he'll excel quite as well as Tavius there, but I think he could lend something in pass coverage. Again, I went back and watched his tape a couple days ago, and I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, it's an enormous black hole for the Ravens currently is who can play Sam linebacker. And I think they still may sign another vet outside linebacker, which will put further pressure on the roster spot that probably may not be there for Adisa. But if they do go to another outside linebacker, it became more difficult for them to go back and re-sign Clowney now that they drafted Zion Young, because Zion Young and Tavius are very similar. Zion Young is probably going to play at the rush side, would be my guess, which means he'll be opposite the uncovered tackle, usually the left tackle on right-handed teams, right-handed offenses that play the tight end on the right side. And that means that you're going to see Tavius, I think, moving to that side of the field on early downs, or Mike Green, maybe taking some of that role. If you sign a Clowney, then maybe Mike Green is still cast in more of an early down role, which I think would be very unfortunate. But Clowney might be the appropriate guy to take passing down snaps away from Green if you're going to do that. I personally, with this outside linebacker group, one of the things I want the Ravens to commit to is to try and find out who they have with Mike Green this year. I think it would be great if they could figure that out for Adisa Isaac, but on a 1 in 10 point scale, it's a 9 or a 9.5 to figure, or it's probably an 8.5 or a 9 to figure out what they have with Green. And it's a 1.5 to a 2 to make sure they figure out what they have with Isaac.
Yeah, I do agree with that. You know, I think they have very high expectations for Green. I think they really want him to be the coveted pass rusher that everyone thinks he can be, like he was in college. And with Isaac, you know, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you know, it's not the end of the world. And again, Ravens have had great success finding players like Clowney and Van Noy and JPP out of the trash heap. And yeah, They've played very well. But man, I would love to roll the dice with Isaac if he shows everything in camp and he had a great preseason. I would love to roll the dice with him and get two more really good years out of him at least.
Yeah, it would be terrific if they could. And I think we'll get to what that might look like. But you've got Hendrickson, Green, Young, Tavius Robinson, and possibly a vet edge. It's already looking like the room might be too crowded. And I'll tell you what, there's another signing the Ravens made that I think might impact the edge position from the way the Ravens look at it, and that's Calais Campbell. Because, you know, Calais certainly has lined up everywhere along the line of scrimmage in his career. So is a player like Madubuike, who's lined up on the edge in some of the way the Ravens have lined up in the past couple of years, actually really more 2 years ago than anything. But it makes it that much harder to give Adisa Isaac an opportunity within this structure. So we'll see how this works out. I don't have super high hopes for where Adisa ends up in this, but I think there is a path to playing time, and maybe we'll talk about that in terms of what a good season and a great season looks like. So what for you, what's a good season look like for Adisa Isaac?
Yeah, for a good season with him, for me, it's kind of solidifying and winning that outside linebacker number five role. I think his body shape, I think, contributes pretty well to special teams. I think he could, you know, his athleticism, his size, I think he'd be a really good special teams player. To me, rotating in with Robinson, I think would be good. I see if he could generate like two and a half sacks, 25 tackles, a couple tackles for loss, I think would be really good and start to show that he could be competent in pass coverage at the Sam spot. And I think that would be like a good season for him.
Okay. So I'm setting the good season. I want to preface this because I definitely am not as high as you are, but I have him at the 60th percentile here is, and I really went back and forth a lot on that. And I'm really saying, is there a 40% chance that Adisa Isaac makes this team coming out of camp? And I think the answer might be no. And certainly as a matter of function of health of the other players and to a large degree, and help himself to an even larger degree than that, obviously. But I think he shows up in this, again, a 60th percentile season. I think he shows up in practices and the preseason. So we see a full preseason from him this time, where we see at least the flashes and probably some good aggregate overall play, because he could be one of the better players on the field for a lot of those games. If you know, he plays what we expect in the preseason, I really want him to show up in practice. I want him to be a guy that people are noticing in camp, that he is knocking over tight ends, that he's, you know, making some quick pressures. He looks quicker and he looks powerful in practices. I want to see that. Then I'd see he's probably at the 60th percentile cut and clears waivers, I'm hoping, and that's really a Ravens thing, not necessarily an Adisa Isaac positive, and is sent to the practice squad after that. And then I'd see him, you know, regaining a spot on the roster via elevations, where he would have up to three, and then being brought back to the roster at some point during the season if injury allows it. And then if he got back during the season at some point, maybe we'd see him play a four-unit special teams role when he was active, and he would be back on the developmental curve as a pass rusher based primarily on those practice results. Again, two and a half sacks to me is, that's so far above the 80th percentile even. I can't even put it there for Isaac. So I think, you know, any kind of flashes as a pass rusher would be good. And unfortunately, I'm not as optimistic given the crowded roster that he'll make it. And I'm probably more than 50% right now that the Ravens are going to make another move for an outside linebacker that is going to reduce those chances further. So while I like the player and I really hope Adisa Isaac can come back and be a player, he's also got a lot less sand in the hourglass than some of the other options they have. And so they've got to be careful about Mike Green with 3 years left of sand in the hourglass. And Adisa Isaac only has two. And they've got to be careful making sure they get enough play out of Zion Young in his rookie year to make sure they understand who he is, which I don't think will be a problem, by the way. But, you know, he's got 4 years of high-value play he can give the Ravens. In the case of Isaac, there's less of a total amount of playing time, and there's probably a lower ceiling on how good he'll be during that playing time. And that it makes it a very difficult projection for me for him to be on the roster on opening day. That said, I hope he stays around, is on the practice squad, and can be elevated, and the Ravens make use of him during the season.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And kind of, you know, the Ravens are in a win now mode, more or less, and they might just be better suited grabbing a Clowney and not even taking the risk of Adisa Isaac. I just want a surefire, you know, really good player in there. But how he plays and, you know, what the kid is made of, just full bore at all times, hard worker. I feel good that he's going to make a good impression on this new Ravens staff. So, but again, I'm a little more optimistic about him than you are.
Well, sounds great. Yeah, let's move on. What's a great season look like for Adisa Isaac? Because you already have a pretty high level in terms of your good year.
Yeah.
Now I'm really interested.
He's going to get 15 sacks now.
Yes.
a great season for him. He becomes the Ravens' starting Sam linebacker role. That's my ultimate goal, or my ultimate vision of him for having a great season, where he racks up some sacks, maybe 35, 38 tackles, and plays 30-35% of the snaps. That, to me, would be a great season for Adisa Isaac.
I agree completely. That'd be a fantastic season for Adisa Isaac. And to do so, he'd have to beat out Tavius and Zion Young out of some significant snaps to get that role. He might even have to beat up Mike Green out of some snaps to have that size of a role. But, you know, that said, you need two outside linebackers per play. Actually, you need more like 2.3 or thereabouts, maybe 2.4, including kick inside guys on obvious passing situations. That means if you have five, each of them, 2.4 over five is about 0.48, can play about 48% of the snaps. Your average guy can play 48% of the snaps at outside linebacker. Maybe it's 46% if it's 2.3. So anyway, the point being with this is that there are some snaps to be had there. There are opportunities to be had, and there'll be injuries which occur that'll do that. I'm just not sure he's one of the top five. I think it's going to be challenging for him to get the activations needed to play a lot of snaps. But I appreciate that optimism. And by the way, you're nailing it right on the head, because if he could take the Sam role and nobody else can really do it, and the Ravens coverage is suffering, and more importantly, their pass rush is suffering from the lack of flexibility from not having a Sam linebacker they can trust to drop, then that would be the path for Adisa Isaac to get on the field for the 26 Ravens.
Yeah. And I think Zion too, I think he might take a little less snaps than we think. I think he might be the Pernell McPhee role, where he's like becomes a very coveted inside pass rusher a little bit more than even on early downs. I think that's where he's going to find a home. And I think he's going to wreak some havoc there for sure.
I'm with you on that. I think he definitely will be kicking inside. And it's one of the things that makes Zion Young such a good pick, is that he has that versatility to play early downs, run defense, and kick inside. Tavius has that too. So the Ravens, in the past, they've had great Sam linebacker versatility. For instance, when they had Judon and Bowser on the team, there wasn't another team in the NFL that had two Sam linebackers, you know, as good. And most teams didn't have one Sam linebacker in the same area code as those two. I'll tell you what I have is a great season. I'm just going to read directly since we're running kind of late here. Practices well and plays well in preseason. An injury creates an opportunity for him on the opening day roster. Snap count of 15% plus on defense, with a defined role in run defense to allow rest for other pass rushers, creates some pressure on his snaps, stays in the Ravens' plans for year four in 2026 as at a minimum a 90-man camp invite. So, you know, one of the easiest articles I always say to write every year is to write the guys who are at risk of being cut on cutdown day. Cause the first thing you look at is the fourth year players. I shouldn't give away this secret, or, you know, but it really is well known that you look at this and you just look at, and last year, the perfect guy who, you know, fell in this category was JAD. And it seemed like, you know, he played pretty well, but he's a fourth year player. And, you know, the Ravens had to make a tough decision. Adisa Isaac could be next year's JAD.
Absolutely. You said his family listens to this podcast?
No, I'm not aware that they do, but I, you know, I was joking.
Got it.
We spent so much time on Zay Flowers, 46 minutes or something, and then we only have 15 minutes for Adisa Isaac. But do love the player. Really hope the best for Adisa Isaac, whether it's here or somewhere else. But I question in this very crowded room how he's going to make hay. And I really honestly hope it doesn't happen via injury, but I think that's probably his best bet at this point. Tony, always a pleasure talking football with you. By the way, really appreciate the visits from you on draft night. Your friend also, Matt, absolutely outstanding in terms of, you know, being entertaining and having something interesting to say on the draft stream. And that was a lot of fun. And appreciate having both of you guys on there. Do you want to maybe talk for a second about the great mock draft you guys did on Reddit, and just the process more than the actual
pick? Yeah. Briefly, I'll touch on it. So the NFL Reddit reached out to every single subreddit of all 32 teams of who wanted to be part of a mock draft representing their team. And I was fortunate enough to get picked for that. So myself and a couple others, we drafted on behalf of the Ravens. It was super legit. There was real trades going on. There was, you know, all kind of banter back and forth. And everyone from all the different teams were really savvy and almost experts on their respective teams. So it made it really fun and really legit. And I will give us a quick plug. We nailed two of the picks. So we hit Rashawn Gary, or that's not him. Rashawn
Benny.
Yeah, that's the guy. And then we hit Vanga.
You guys probably had Benny drafted in round four or five, though, like most of us.
We had him in four or five. But what I will say is we almost hit like if you took the Ravens draft and every position they drafted, we were, out of all 11 picks, identical, except we had one. They had, Ravens drafted two receivers, and we had one receiver, and we drafted a safety. Other than that, we had every single position nailed. We had, you know, we had the one cornerback, we had, you know, the one punter, everything. So we were pretty close. And then even like the receivers, we took a big body receiver, we took a big running back. So fairly accurate. I felt it was a success on our behalf. It was really fun.
Is an outstanding write-up out there on Reddit for you, and worth the time. In fact, in general, I'd say the Reddit community is really worthwhile. I didn't used to think that way, and I don't want to keep bringing this up, but there were a lot of Buck Allen memes dominating all levels of posting over there, which was kind of just a little silly. But now the discourse is at a very high level over there, and I'd say of the various message boards you can go to, and I know people have all got their favorites, I highly recommend the Reddit boards for a lot of very high quality posters out there. I've really been gravitating to people, to not only talking to people over there, but to having them on the show now. And Tony, you're just one of probably eight guys now who's been on the show from the Reddit community over the last 6 months or so, and I've really appreciated the interaction. I hope there's more of it.
Of course. Thanks, Ken. Yeah, it's 70%, I would say, good, and then there's just people that are pure doom and gloom, and then there's the Buck Allen memes. But there's a lot of good out there. I appreciate you having me.
All right, other folks out there, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag if you have questions. I'll get it to the appropriate slotting. If you'd like to do a short, hit me up. DMs are always open. And thanks again for the listens. Really appreciate it. I'd like you to point out this show, particularly the Expectation series, which I think has very broad appeal to that one older gentleman you know, about my age, maybe 60 or older, who would love to just go to a website and click to listen to a podcast, as opposed to using one of these darn headsets AirPods for his phone that he's not used to, and download podcasts. Apparently, there's a lot of the traffic goes directly through Chrome to listen to my podcast. So there are a lot of people who follow this, old man formula, and I greatly appreciate your listens. Love to hear from you in the comments. Tony, thanks again for coming on.
You got it. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.